This episode is brought to you by Baron Fig. Find out more at mofonepodcast.com/Baron Fig.
Hey, this is Frank Fontano. You guys are listening to Masters of One Podcast. You can find me at Frank Fontano.
Welcome to another episode of the Master of One Podcast, the podcast that's got until the end of this episode to find true love and break this hideous spell. Part one this week, we talk about Vast, TED 2017, and Beauty and the Beast, and we welcome back Andrew Kolb for another segment of Calculated Comics with Kolb. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
And I'm Luke, your Master of Toys and Games.
So get ready for a heartwarming tale as old as time, because it's time for another episode.
Are there going to be songs as old as rhymes?
The M of One podcast is excited to partner with Baron Fig, maker of the best notebooks and writing tools in the world. Baron Fig is all about the thinker, the people that create and inspire those around them, and all of their products are a result of community feedback. You will not find a better notebook than their flagship Confidant, and once you use it, you'll be hooked. Head over to mofonepodcast.com/Baron Fig to learn more and get yours today. We like to kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, or noteworthy about our weeks. Luke,
yes.
I'm looking at you.
Okay, I'll talk about it. All right, guys, I beat Horizon Zero Dawn. I've been talking about it for a couple weeks now, saying how good it is. I beat it. Man, it's such a good story. Like, the gameplay is fun. So I've already said the gameplay is fun. I've said the graphics good. The audio, voiceover, like, it's just all good. But the story, the way they weave it in and out, and there's so many extras, like, throughout the game you can go through and find these old, like, data points and all these old, like, voice recordings from what happened. And the way they tie the story in with that, there's, like, over 100 of those kinds of things to discover, and it just builds into the story. So that was awesome. If you haven't played it, go get it. It's such a good game. And then in the mail today, I got a super cool thing. I got this.
Hey, I've seen that before.
Yeah, I got a Happiest Hipster from our friend Jared Mariama. Sent it to me in the mail, and it is awesome. Super duper cool. I love the Hipster Mickey character he did. Just such a fun idea. But yeah, I mean, my week was pretty simple. Just playing some games. Rachel started a new job today, so I'm like more Mr. Mom. So that's fun.
My mom had less of a beard.
Okay. She did it wrong. So,
okay.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's my week. How about...
Are you going to say what she does?
She works kind of like with at-risk teens, kind of helping them get to better things in life. So, I mean, that's kind of the easiest way to say it. It's a really complex job. But yeah, that's it. Throw it to Andrew, because I throw it to Patrick all the time.
So if you tuned in last week, you knew that my week was a little chaotic. We were driving a lot. The week didn't shape out the way that we had intended. Had some family emergencies that pulled us literally complete cross country. So that kind of took it out of me. I didn't get a lot of design time, didn't get a lot of really any time to do much of anything. So I've been little by little just chipping away at Zelda. I apparently am nowhere near even scratching the surface of it. I found out from Andrew Kolb. That's still a lot of fun, and I'm still enjoying it. It's just really difficult for me. It's just been a lot of planning, honestly. Not a ton of new stuff in terms of, like, you know, anything crazy cool. I haven't gotten anything really neat. The only thing is, I've had this just itch to draw the new DuckTales characters because I love the new art style of them.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's just been like just in the back of my mind for the last like 2 or 3 weeks. And so finally today I was super busy. I had so much stuff to do. And I said, you know what? I need to just take a 15-minute like little sketch break. And I sketched Dewey and inked him in my confidant. And it was a nice kind of release for me to be able to do that. And it was a lot of fun. Hopefully I'm going to take time over the next week and each day take 15 or 20 minutes to do another character from the show and hopefully get the whole lineup, you know, over the course of the next week. Anyway, that's really been my week. It's been pretty low key. I went and saw, Beauty and the Beast, but that will be my category. So I'll wait to talk about that. I'm going to toss it over to Patrick.
Yeah, so I have a couple things to talk about. I need to bring closure to two stories, and maybe three. So first and foremost, Cardistry from Hero Complex Gallery. I finally got my Cardistry deck in. I had been thinking about purchasing one of these for a while. I hadn't pulled the trigger, and they had a few more left on their site, so I decided to grab one. To be honest, they might be sold out by now. They might have one or two left. So if it sounds cool, you need to head over to Hero Complex Gallery and go and pick one up now. But what it is, it's a deck of cards where every single one of the cards was designed by a different artist. And the list of people is just insane. Like, I'm obviously not going to read all of them, but, you know, Craig Drake is a big one. Tracy Ching, who we had on the show, that's obviously a big artist. Paul Shipper, Vance Kelly, Glenn Brogan. One that is...
I believe Vance Kelly is who did my... I'm fairly confident is the one who did my oh my gosh, what's it called, Pan's Labyrinth glow in the dark piece, that big 24 by 36.
I think you're right. Yes. Mark Englert. And I think one that a guy that I didn't know, and then thumbing through these cards, just one that stood out to me is a guy named, I think it's Sam Gilby. So if I'm wrong about that, then I'm sorry for mispronouncing it, but the card looks awesome. So again, honestly, like if you love order, then you may hate this deck because every card is different. But I think the thing is beautiful. So that's from Hero Complex Gallery. My only complaint, the cards feel good. Okay. So I'm happy with the feel of the cards. The box and the packaging felt really cheap, honestly. So now that being said, printing cards is not cheap. And we looked at doing some for M of One, and we quickly realized that was not going to happen right now. So I understand it, but the cards themselves, they do feel very good. So that's one thing. The next thing, this is a story I didn't realize I'd never followed up on. But if you remember, this was a couple months ago, I bought the Infected Dunny. This was Scott Wolkowski, the Infected Dunny in Cryogenic Blue Kid Robot, and it never made it to me. I had to file a thing with UPS to say that it was undelivered. And so what happened is you have to wait. It has to be at least like, I think, 10 days from when it's supposed to arrive or before they'll even let you, it might be 14 days before they'll let you start a inquiry. So, you know, I wait the week for it to get here, doesn't show up. Then I have to wait another 10 days to start the inquiry. Then that takes 10 days. So here's the deal. The last day, UPS called me, or I think it's UPS, to tell me that they couldn't find it, and so they needed to get a receipt from me. They were going to reimburse me the full amount. And it just so happens about 10 minutes before that phone call, a box had shown up on my desk, and it was the Infected Dunny. So it did end up showing up. I had a moment.
I love that.
I had a moment where I had to decide, do I tell this woman that... You know, do I send her a receipt and then get a refund of my money and still have the stuff? I'm just too honest to do that. So I went ahead and told her that it did show up and you know, canceled the thing. But, man, the timing was, I think, great. But the other part of me says, why couldn't I have just waited 24 more hours? And then I wouldn't have had to have been honest. And then the final thing, this is before we get into... Andrew's category. I also saw Beauty and the Beast, but I wanted to tell you a fun little thing that happened to me, and I didn't want to ruin his category later. Someone pulled a fire alarm. We've all seen the animated film. This is not a spoiler. At a certain point, the villagers try to go get the beast, and when that song is playing, like they kill the beast and they're trying to break in the castle doors. At that point, strobes start going off. Fire alarm goes off. The projectors are attached to it, so the projectors shut off immediately. This was one of those theaters where you pay for food. So like in the last 30 minutes, they come get your credit card to go run it.
Right.
They hadn't brought my credit card back. Then they tell me I have to leave the theater. So I don't have a credit card. They shuffle me outside. and then they let us back
in. Did someone do this so they didn't have to pay or something? I don't understand.
And then at that point, they let us back in after like 15 minutes. Me and Mackenzie sit in the theater for 45 minutes before a manager ever came in the theater. And frankly, she was, when it comes to fixing the situation, it didn't happen. So we didn't get to see the end of the movie. They gave us a voucher for a ticket.
I don't understand. Why didn't they just pick up the movie where it left off?
People were already coming in to sit down for the next showing. Like people, there was a showing that was supposed to start, and people, like, they were still in the lobby selling tickets, letting people in.
Wow.
And we're sitting there like, we haven't finished our showing. So in this, the problem is this whole evening got kicked off with, like, we sit down, and we haven't been here in a couple of weeks because there's a theater closer to me that, like, does food and everything. They handed us these, like, looks like menus someone printed out of their email box, immediately tell us that half the stuff sold out because AMC bought the theater and they're closing down this, like, Ovation Room. And so they're like, yeah, so we're selling out of everything because it's closing down in 2 weeks. So I paid full price for a ticket to go sit in a theater, be told half the food's not there, have to leave because of the fire alarm, sit for an hour waiting on someone to, like, start the movie so I can finish it, then get told I'm not going to get to finish the movie and then leave. So they give me a voucher for the movie. But the problem is, paid $8 for parking, took 3 hours out of my night. I did buy some popcorn and a glass of wine when I was there. Didn't get to finish the movie. And then all I got was a voucher for a set of tickets. So it was, let me just say, Majestic 12, you outdid yourself. But anyway, so I don't know how it ends. I'm leaning on Andrew to actually tell me how the movie ends because I don't know. But
yeah,
Cogsworth looked beautiful. So yeah, finish it up.
Okay, well, that was you finishing it up. Cool. So that's it for our Around the Table. Up next, Calculated Comics with Kolb. Every month, Andrew Kolb joins us to update us on what's new and good in the world of comics. And so it is that time again. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Andrew Kolb back to the show for Calculated Comics with Kolb.
Hi, friends. Well, thanks for having me.
To be fair, semantics. It's not necessarily the newest and greatest, since I think we've talked about some comics that are like a decade or more old.
Yeah, yeah, I think, but the new maybe refers maybe? To...
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I think
that
just, it's like new to the M of One family.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So welcome back to the show. We're glad you're here. I know that you have a thing to start off with
two.
Us. And so Luke says two, Patrick says one, great. And I say two.
No, we've. Do you you have our combinations, right? Can we do a combination we haven't done yet?
Yeah, we have to.
That, yeah, but I always, like, whenever you do one that you've done, I put a new one in.
Yeah.
So if you keep doing the same one forever and always, we will still talk about new comics.
Luke said two, right?
Yes.
He sure did, yep.
I say three.
Oh, okay. Just to be mean.
Yeah.
I'm going to say three.
Oh, great. Well, yeah, this is a new one. So that's great. I mean, like, they're all new, but 233. Oh, great. Okay. So this is a series. I don't know if you want to talk about just the first in the series, but I'm going to try it from the point of view of the collection. So it's Parker, as written by Richard Stark, but illustrated or reimagined by Darwin Cook. Who actually passed away last year. So I've put a bunch of his comics into this rubric as kind of a tribute. So what it is these kind of pulpy, like, revenge detective comics from, I think it's like the 50s, 60s, that are reimagined as graphic novels. So each of the graphic novels that Darwin Cook did was a single novel written by Richard Stark. So what else do I have to say about it?
This is like the he came into the bedroom, you see? That type of stuff?
Kinda. Yeah, like, so Parker, there's a bunch of movies based off of Parker.
Or is this like the, like, he's talking to the woman in the police station, and he stops and he walks towards the camera and he's like, I'd never seen her in here before. She had, like, blue smoky eyes and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You are the best like at this, Patrick. You have missed your calling.
Yeah, I think you could write noir. So, yeah, and I think that's a good example. It's, like, some noir, some, like, Ocean's 11 vibe. There's, like, the first novel is, like, a revenge story. There's a later one where he's trapped in a carnival. I'm gonna keep doing it.
No, you gotta power through, because I just keep replaying in my head. See,
just picture him in like a trench coat and like a fedora and like a swinging single light in the room.
Yeah,
and then she walks in with the heel. Yeah, it'd be great.
So if I'm looking at these right, because I'm looking this up, is it the ones that it's like the outfit, the score, sleigh ground, the hunter? Okay, cool.
Yeah, so Sleigh Ground is one where Parker is trapped in an amusement park off season, and the police are coming to get him, and he has to, or like a maybe a mob. I have to go back and read him again. So he's like trying to survive in this amusement park in the winter. So yeah, each one is like a pretty concise story. If you're looking at the artwork, you can see that each one is just two colors, like black and like yellow or black and blue, which is it's got like a cool kind of like 50s vibe to it. But they're really kind of pulpy and kind of violent, but not too gruesome. I really liked them. I just looked up movies based off of off of the character of Parker.
Yeah.
Point Blank. Let's look for more recent ones. So there was actually one featuring Jason Statham in 2013, which was based off of this character. So that gives you a good idea. If Jason Statham can play this guy, that's the kind of
vibe. Wait, what was the film?
It was called Parker. So for the longest time, they didn't give the rights to actually use the name Parker, but they could use like the story. So this is one of the few where it's actually him.
Parker.
Well, yeah. Parker. So I'm finding that Payback, right? Payback,
yeah.
Movie Payback with everyone's favorite Mel Gibson.
Yeah, was
based on a Parker novel. The Hunter.
I tried to watch that movie and I couldn't make it all the way through. I sat down to watch Parker and I probably made it like 35% of the way in.
Parker, the movie with Jason Statham.
I couldn't make it all the way through. It was too rough.
It's not great.
Okay, so maybe not the best advertisement. Listen, for this
I think a lot of that has to do with. Jason Statham.
Yeah, I would say maybe the medium it kind of muddied the message. Like, I think these stories work better as like the written word and like some kind of like snippet of visuals.
Yeah, or like an audio like drama.
Do you do a Jason Statham impersonation? Can you say, "Are you afraid of the Germans, Tommy?" Like Jason Statham.
I don't know.
I think you probably should try.
I think Andrew Sale can.
Well, I want to hear Cold first.
I need like a, what's a touchstone of Jason Statham? Like, what's a quick line that he often says?
I'm Jason Statham.
I'll say that, and then I'll say, what's the line again?
Are you afraid of the Germans, Tommy?
Okay, so it goes, oh, I'm Jason Statham. Are you afraid of the Germans? Johnny? Tommy?
This is gold.
Now it's Andrew Sale.
I thought I did it already. No, you have to say the line, though.
I'm Jason Statham. Are you afraid of the Germans, Tommy?
Audio listeners. No,
so
it was
no
great,
one has seen the movie Snatch. Fair enough.
I have seen the movie Snatch. I love the movie Snatch.
Okay. That's
like the director's cut of the movie Snatch comes with a dealer button.
My two favorite lines of the film are you afraid of the Germans? And then the other one.
Okay. Okay.
He wants to buy a caravan for his mom. That whole thing is awesome.
Get a dog for my mom. Put a caravan.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's his face?
Bradley Cooper. Yeah.
Brad Pitt.
And he's playing an Irishman.
Okay.
Anyway,
what the audio listeners don't see is Andrew's eyes when he does the Jason Statham. Like, it gets real intense.
How else do you get...
Where did that silenced gun come from?
This is literally a man who had a bomb in his heart, and he had to keep moving, right? He's like the speed version of a human.
And it all read on your face, all of that story and character.
How could
right
it not?
Out on the screen.
How could it not? All right, so...
Isn't that a different movie?
Yeah, but it's Jason Statham.
I thought you were talking about the character.
That's what he said in the movie. That's the movie, the whole movie. He just goes, he's like, I'm Jason Statham in Crank. That's the whole movie is him saying...
This is our new segment, Calculated Statham with Cole, where we talk about the various films of Jason Statham.
Oh, gosh.
For a man with no range, he has a lot of range.
Do you remember that time that we did that? There was an episode where we did accents.
Listen back.
That was the four of us, and that was my waking nightmare.
That wasn't pure gold, that was
D&D practice, Andrew.
It was one of them. But I also do voices, but I don't do accents.
Like, it was the game. We were playing the game.
Because we had to do a Southern Gent.
There was another one too. Whatever. You can go back and find it. It's ridiculous. Andrew would love it if you went back and watched that.
It's out there. I have no regrets. Just being put on the spot for accents is not my strength.
Fine. I apologize.
There's zero issue. It's totally fine.
I get it.
Last calculated comments with Cole. Thanks,
Patrick. Yes, because from now on, it's calculated Statham with Cole. Okay, we've established
calculated Statham's with Cole.
That's your intro. We got it.
You kind of turned into Michael Caine at the end, but it's fine.
Wait, are those not the same person?
No, Michael Caine is different.
So tell everybody where they can find you, as always. And I'm guessing
any other questions about Parker, about the comic?
I feel like we've seen it.
No, you're right. I think go out and check it out if you like kind of violent, pulpy comics. Read them. Otherwise,
is it like Sin City? Is that what it is?
Because I'm looking at cover art. I see two different styles in this cover art, and it's like I see a couple covers that are like full color, and then I see a couple that are just this like two color thing. Is it different cover art depending, or different artwork depending on which version you get, or is it all the same? It's just different covers for like updates.
It's different covers for the same interior.
Okay.
Because what happened was they released like a Martini edition, which was the first two comics in like a big oversized collector's edition. So that's why some of the artwork is full color.
Gotcha.
So let me ask this question too. And you feel free, Luke, to cut out all of the stupid shenanigans, but
No, we have to keep it forever. I'm going to keep referencing it later. So that way continuity requires us to keep it in.
maybe it just goes to the patrons. But when I search Parker comic series, all I get is, Spider-Man. Peter Parker pops up.
I would Google Richard Stark Parker.
Or Darwin. Which is
or Darwin Cook Parker.
W-Y-N.
Yeah.
That makes a world of difference. I see it now. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
And the artwork implies that it is very dark. This is not a kid's read.
No, yeah, I don't know if it's
like
written,
a dead hooker or something in one of the covers that I'm looking at.
Yeah. I don't know if it's rated teen or if it's just mature. But they're mature reads for sure.
It's interesting to me because the art style, at least from the covers I'm looking at, it feels like a very like more detailed drawing of Parker. And then everything in the background is more like of a very loose line style of like a editorial cartoon.
Yeah, I think like Darwin Cook's influences were a lot of the kind of, well, I think you nailed it, like advertising illustration of the like 50s and 60s, like that Mad Men era.
Yeah.
I think all these books are set in that era and definitely take heavy influences. Like there's in that one in Slayground where it's set in the amusement park, there's a segment where there's like a flyer for the amusement park and it's like right out of like 60s Disney. Cool. Like it's just like that. Yeah, there's advertisements throughout. Like it's, It's a cool study. Like, I think it's a it was a real passion project of his, and you can see it on each page.
It's got a bit of a Frank Miller meets Kevin Eastman flair to it.
Yeah.
The contrast and the layout and everything is actually pretty great. But it definitely feels like 50s or 60s concept art for sure. Like ad art. So, yeah, this is good. I might pick up a copy of this cause it looks like it would be a good read.
And I don't think they're available in like each book is a complete story. So you don't have to worry about collecting a few issues. Like if you buy one, I don't even really think you need any continuity. Like you could just pick up any of them and it's a perfect read on its own.
Cool.
And like the paperback, like the graphic novel, you can get it for like $12 on Amazon. So
cool.
If this sounds interesting to you, go pick it up as always. Andrew, thanks for bringing something new and fun, at least to us.
I had fun.
And super cool. And yeah, no, and great. For bringing up,
I did too.
Honestly, we don't talk about Jason Statham enough.
That's
honestly
true.
That's I think that's what I've come to realize. And so tell everybody if there's anything that you're allowed to tell us about, where they can find what you're doing and maybe new projects.
Well, okay, so my existing picture book, Edmund Unravels, is still out and available for sale. If you have someone who likes to travel or graduating or something like that, it's a cool gift. Or if you just like picture books.
You know, we talked about that on the show the other day with Diane Gibbs, with when we were on Design Recharge.
Okay.
She, it fit perfectly, so... yeah, if you have not read that book, okay. Go get it, whether you have a kid or don't have a kid, but it's super great. We pull it out and read it pretty regularly.
Cool. And I have more picture books coming out in September, but I'm not going to worry about any of that yet. Actually, no, you can pre-order, I guess. So that's something you could do. So it's Les and Ronnie Step Out, about a left foot and a right foot who disagree about socks and shoes.
Nice.
so you can pre-order on Amazon.
Really? Les and Ronnie?
How do you spell Ronnie?
R-O-N-N-I-E.
Love it.
Thanks. So yeah, so that's coming out in September. So if you want to pre-order, that's cool. Otherwise, I will probably mention it every comic month segment up until and including its release. Otherwise, you can chat with me about the comics you read and illustrations you like on Twitter or Instagram. I'm ColbizNeat. And yeah, that's the best way to find me. So thanks for having me on, guys.
I mean, obviously, you're always welcome. So if ever you're just bored, hop on Skype and we'll record an episode. I'm looking at the handful of like snapshots that you provide in the pre-order. This looks super fun. Like the left foot, the right foot, like on the skateboard.
Thanks.
It looks good. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's about like getting along and like, I don't know, thinking about what it's like to be in someone else's shoes.
Literally.
How long did it take you to decide how to draw the toes? I feel like that would have been a challenge.
That was a long conversation with my like art director and editor, like the shapes of the feet and the representation of the toes in general. So I would say maybe a couple of emails, 2 or 3 weeks.
I would love when this is ready to go, we'll have you back on for a full episode to talk about it and to promote it and everything. But I'm interested in a lot of how you came to the like character and concept design that you came to. So we'll save all that stuff for maybe a couple months from now.
Great.
But thanks for popping on. As always, stay warm. Is it spring in Canada yet? Does that count?
Yeah, it is. I will quickly do the math. So it's like maybe 40 degrees here now.
That's 40, warmer than 42. Where I am.
Oh, yeah. What's it?
Ohio.
Where
at? It's like maybe 30.
Oh, okay. So
it was 70 degrees here today.
It's okay. Cool, man. Well, we were so glad to chat with you, and we will see you next month.
Thanks.
See you.
Until next time, guys.
Bye, buddy.
That's it for Calculated Comics with Kolb. Up next, Master Categories. Every week we talk about our master categories, which are the categories we drew the week before, completely random. And so, Luke, What did you talk to us?
What did I talk to us about? Oh, I'll tell you right now. I'm going to talk to us about a board game.
Okay, good. So you got toys and games then,
yeah,
huh?
I got toys and games again. Which, this is awesome. I love when I have my category because here's the thing. I spend money on the things that I like, and I like board games. So I got a game. I kickstarted it a while ago, but they were actually – so – sorry, I'm knocking things over. If you've ever kickstarted a board game or kickstarted anything, you know that half of the problem with Kickstarter – is that it takes forever to get anything.
Delayed gratification.
Yeah. So that's half the problem. The other half of the problem is the amount of emails you get from Kickstarter when you're part of a campaign. It's a lot. This shipped really, really fast. And it's I think it's because it's the second printing of this game. The game I'm talking about is Vast, the Crystal Caverns by Leader Games. This game, first of all, is gorgeous. It is it's a up to five player game. And you play, so everybody has a different role and everybody's trying to accomplish their role independently of everybody else. You have somebody that plays the knight, somebody plays goblins,
okay,
somebody plays the dragon, and somebody plays the cave that you're in. And then for the second printing, they added a second component or a fifth character, which is a thief. So there's up to five people, and they all have different objectives. The knight is trying to slay the dragon. The goblins are trying to kill the knight. The dragon is trying to escape the cave, and the cave is trying to and the thief is trying to get treasure and escape the cave, and the cave is trying to collapse on everybody and kill them. And it's awesome. It's super complex, comes with so many pieces. There's these gems that are part of the cave. There's these placeholders. Everybody has a character board that has so many different things that you have to do for each role, depending on what it is.
Each one is uniquely designed.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Those boards look really good too.
The art style is just, I mean, I love it.
I mean, it looks just like Justin Peterson did this art.
Yeah.
Did he do it?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
Did Jason Peterson?
No.
Because he's also a man, probably.
Okay. I'm sure there's a Jason Peterson. But it comes with great art and a lot of components. There's tons of wooden pieces for all of the representative of treasure chests and stat markers and all this stuff. There's cards.
Have you played it yet?
I have started to read up on the rules. It's pretty complex on what everybody does. I haven't got a chance to play it. I saw people playing it. I know. I realized how funny that sounds. I saw people playing it at Gen Con last year. And it looks like a blast. There's cards and there's tons of tiles. The way it works is the cave sets out these different tokens and builds the cave as you play. And then once all the cave tiles get set out, then the cave can start collapsing on itself.
It seems like it's incorporating multiple game mechanics all into one.
And I think that's why it's so complex.
Each person is like playing a different game.
Pretty much.
And each game has its own mechanic.
Right. But your game is interfered, or other people playing their game interferes with how you're playing your game, so it's hard to plan on what your game is. But
that's cool.
It looks awesome. And it's, as we've said, it's a great art style. And you get a whole bunch for the money. So it's available now if you look it up on leadergames.com or Board Game Geek or Amazon or wherever, Cool Stuff Inc. You can pick it up and you will have a blast.
Artist is Kyle Farron.
Kyle Farron. Thank you, Patrick.
Kyle McFarron.
Okay.
McFarron?
Nope, just Baron.
Oh, okay.
Do I get it next, Luke?
Yeah.
Thanks, man. So this week I have art and design, and I am just only maybe slightly going to rant, but TED 2017 is a conference. It's coming to Vancouver, British Columbia, so then I guess that means all our Canadian friends can enjoy it, except that it's sold
out.
I'd like for you to say
Vancouver again.
Is it not Vancouver?
I just want you to say it. I like how you say it.
Vancouver. So, and I just dropped this to y'all so y'all could view it. Now, the website is trying to be brutalist. It's primary colors. Mean? So, frankly, it's shocking. I mean, it tends to use like primary colors or how do I say like kind of like the CSS defaults.
Is that an actual web term?
Yeah, brutalist web design.
So I'm asking.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. If you Google brutalist web design,
my word.
You'll find a lot of examples of it. It uses a lot of just the user agent styling. So for those that don't know, user agent styling is the browser defaults. So like, think about like an unordered list or a select or a. Although you can't style those very much. That's a bad example. But like your H1s through H6s links, or whatever. Yeah, those have what's called user agent styling. That's your browser is applying some styling to those. If all that's there is the tag. So anyway, a lot of this is going to use, you know, one of your, so Brutalist tends to use like one of the six basic system fonts. It uses, again, these like basic colors. It relies a lot on the user agent styling. It is just meant to frankly be harsh. And it also means it ends up being very bright and colorful. Here's my issue. Like sometimes it works very well. I think an example, even though I don't think it, I think it is a little bit more stylized, but I think Bloomberg's website, Bloomberg.com, is a great example of kind of this semi-brutalist that still works very, very well. And again, it's a little bit more of a stylized brutalist feel. The TED website just feels like someone trying to be cool. It doesn't come across to me like it actually...
it's trying to look like it's not trying.
Yeah, I mean, that's... So have you seen the... Well, hello there, fellow kids. Like the meme with like the dude in the skateboard and the hoodie or whatever. Like,
yeah.
It just feels like it was designed by a marketing firm trying to be hip. It just doesn't feel... frankly, like it works in this case. And there are good examples of it working. I'll link to maybe like a brutalist site that like just lists a lot of really good examples of it. But anyway, so that being said, I would just caution people following trends to make sure that a trend is fine, but you still have to communicate the message well. And there are times when I do think you want to upset a viewer. Like, I think there are times that does work.
So what does this do? Like, what does this do? I don't know if subconscious is the right word, but for the viewer, like, what does this type of website do to them as they're viewing it? Like, is it supposed to be like you don't know what you're where to go? Or like, what is it supposed to do?
So I think some people use it in different ways. And honestly, I would have to, like, frankly, you would have to actually look at metrics of user pathways to determine what it is doing. So I'm going to speak from more of a, like, kind of hypothetical.
Okay.
Sometimes you want to disrupt a user because you want to force them to pay attention to the content on a specific part. So you want something that makes them kind of, like, take a step back. Because you then want them to dive into the content. Sometimes you're just creating an art piece. Like sometimes a website is just meant to be an art piece and some art looks weird. You know, it's that simple. In the case of a conference site like this, oh, and then the other piece of it that you might do something really, really stripped down is that you want the content to be, you want the container of the website to be almost like a utility. Like you don't need it to serve a design purpose other than
Craigslist.
Yeah, other than it just needs to get the content to you.
Okay.
So yeah, Craigslist would actually be an example of a brutalist design website because it literally is like content is the only thing. All the other design is stripped away or most of the aesthetic. So there are times when it makes sense if it's meant to be a utility like that, or if it's, or if you're trying to stop someone in their tracks to draw attention to content, or if it's an art piece. In a case like this, I'm not sure I understand what they were trying to accomplish, and that's probably where I take the most issue. Sure. Other than it just looks like it, there's a bit of an X factor of some things just feel or look or sound like ripoffs, and this is just something that feels like a ripoff to me. But that being said, I'm not sure exactly what they were trying to accomplish in this case.
Gotcha.
So, but there are times when it does make sense.
I even tried looking at the content itself, and it's not it doesn't answer it there. It's not like this design aesthetic is tied to the theme. The theme this year is the future you, and I'm reading through it, and it's not like it says a callback to the blah blah blah. You know, you're good. It's not nothing there actually explains why this look and. For me, visually, it just is really abrasive. I mean, brutal is a great word for it. It's very abrasive and not at all appealing and not what I would come to expect from the Ted brand. Maybe that's what they're trying to go with.
Well maybe that's it does say the future you, like in the blurb on the main page, balance a hard look at the seismic shifts. Like, I mean, this is pretty, like, seismic.
Maybe, but, like... But that, yeah, maybe, but that's, that. I think they would need to do a little bit, but yeah, that's reaching a little bit. If they expect us to pull from that, what this is supposed to be.
Sure.
But yeah, this is, so you're Patrick, you're saying you don't like this.
No. I think this misses the mark. And the reason I can easily say that is because I can't discern what the mark was. I think with a lot of other sites, it's pretty easy to say. You know, I would assume with a conference site, your goal is to communicate the purpose, to give people an idea of what they're going to get, and then to ultimately to have the conversion of them purchasing a ticket. So from that standpoint, I know what they're trying to accomplish just based on what the site is for. But that being said, if you're going to say that this somehow harkens to what the future of design might look like, or the future, you know, it's saying the future you. So if you're trying to make the argument that this is somehow representative of the future, then I think to use something that frankly was
so antiquated.
It's antiquated. And number two, yes, this became fashionable recently, but more along the time of like 8 months ago or a year ago, like when Bloomberg was redoing their site, not today. So if you're going to do something off the wall, at least do something off the wall that other people aren't doing. But this feels like it's on the back end of a trend, which is, so then I take issue with the word future and then just using a nearly outdated trend. So yeah, not a fan of the TED2017.TED.com website. Be sure to check it out. Can't buy any tickets. It's sold out. But TED is still a good thing.
Make sure you check out this terrible looking website that you can't do anything on because it's sold out.
It's sold out. But go to TED's website. They have a lot of awesome content there at TED.com. And then the TED Radio Hour, whatever that podcast is they do, is pretty amazing. Oh, so fantastic. If you've never listened to that. Yeah. Then give that an absolute listen. So just follow this podcast up with that podcast. So,
yep.
Andrew.
Actually, just leave this one now and skip my master category. So speaking of my master category, you like that segue?
That was good.
I got TV and film, which was a great time to get TV and film because this week we saw the release of the highly anticipated live action version of Beauty and the Beast. I, unlike Patrick, did get to see the movie to its fruition. I don't know that I had much of a better experience than you did. So have you seen it, Luke?
Nope.
Okay. Are you planning on seeing it?
At some point.
Okay. I know that you're like anti-establishment.
No, I'm not.
Like, people, everyone wants to see
it. I want to see Kong more. I
hate the proletariat.
Yeah. I hate Lumiere. I hear you say that every day. I hate Lumiere. I think this is the only time it's actually come into actual relevancy since 1995. So we went and saw the film. We saw it in IMAX, which was cool. I don't know that there was any additional footage or anything special about IMAX. It didn't feel... I haven't heard anything special about it other than it was big and nice. It sounded really good. But it... Yeah, It wasn't my favorite. So it's the story of Beauty and the Beast. It's an almost identical telling of, if you've seen the 1995 or 1994 Disney classic Beauty and the Beast, it's an almost verbatim retelling of that story with a few quirks here and there. They've added a couple of songs, which I felt like they seemed forced to me. I don't know. Like, what do you say about Beauty and the Beast? Everyone knows the story. And I think in this particular instance, I think that hurt it. In my opinion, I think that hurt it. I would much rather watch the animated version than this one. And I say that slightly hesitantly because, the more that I've kind of let the movie kind of settle, I've liked it more and more, but I still think I would rather see the original. Because it's just the nostalgic piece of it. They took some liberties with some characters. My biggest, instead of focusing on the plot, I'll focus on some of the things that I felt like were highs and lows of it, because everyone knows the plot. In the original film, there was an Academy Award-winning film. They focused a lot more on the secondary characters. And you know what I'm talking about, Patrick? Like, you learned a lot more about Cogsworth's personality. You learned a lot more about Lumiere's personality.
You're saying in the original film?
In the original film. In this film, it felt like they leaned on or rested on or banked on the fact that you already knew that that Cogsworth was kind of stuffy and you knew that Lumiere was a little bit more lively, but they didn't actually dive into those characters very much. There was an assumption made that you already knew certain things. And I think that was a mistake. I think that made a miss. I thought the acting was great. The visual effects were fantastic. Like, just get out of here. How good. Honestly, it was.
Are you telling me you didn't cry during the ballroom scene?
I did not cry during any scenes in that film.
Oh.
Did you cry?
Mackenzie and I lost it.
That's because they stole your credit card.
Oh, no, I was just upset about the entire movie going experience.
Yeah. You really did cry at the ballroom scene?
So, I'm going to be honest. I had a much better experience than you did. I think this kid got to you because I...
No. The kid didn't get to me. The kid didn't make a sound once the movie started.
Okay.
The kid didn't make a sound.
Man, I just... Okay, I thought I was going to be bored out of my mind. I only went because Mackenzie wanted to see the film. If it was not for Mackenzie, I would have never gone and seen this film because I saw the animated one. I didn't really care that much. I didn't really care about this one. This just isn't... When they do the live-action Mulan, pumped for that. I'll be there. Andrew and I will actually fly out to see it with Andrew so we can sing along that whole thing. But I didn't care about this film.
I'm going to hold you to that.
And I didn't like, what's her name, is Belle. I just don't think she, if I picture a live action Belle, it wasn't her. And so I wasn't excited, saw the film, and I actually really enjoyed the film. I was bummed that we had to leave, not because it was really terrible, but because I actually wanted to see the end. And I thought they handled, I didn't like Mrs. Potts, and I didn't like
Chip. Was it Angela Lansbury?
No.
That's
no,
fail.
It was Emma Thompson.
Those characters felt a little like
Mrs.
even
Potts, dude.
Even the design felt a little lazy, which I'm sure that they reference like all these actual old antiques and stuff. Like I'm sure that it's totally founded in something from that time period and all that kind of stuff. I just didn't like the look at all. I thought Cogsworth was incredible. I thought that character was my favorite.
So
the animation and the attitude and the voice, I thought it all just matched up perfectly.
I have a question because obviously I didn't see it and I'm kind of getting lost. If it was a pretty much a retelling or not a retelling or a but like a shot, was it shot by shot almost or not quite?
There was lots of things that
different about those characters and how like do you like Cogsworth so much compared to the old one?
Because they didn't focus on developing those characters as much in this. So they focused on other things. So like where it wasn't shot for shot, they decided to focus on different characters. And you learned a lot at a surface level about a lot of characters as opposed to getting a real niche group. Now you learned a lot more about
family.
Belle.
Yeah, Belle, yeah, her Belle in mother this and one. Father.
Belle and her, yeah, yeah. Than you do in the original. So they took more time to they took more time from other characters to focus on those elements of the story that weren't shot for shot, that were some of the new elements.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because there's about an hour of additional footage in this film over the animated film. So there were several songs that were new.
Pull that from somewhere.
Sure.
Now,
so the song from the Beast, I think, was by far the most forced feeling to me. I didn't feel like there was. Chandra asked me if I so Chandra fell asleep in this movie.
Oh my gosh!
And we were seeing it midday. It wasn't like we went to like a midnight showing. It was it just wasn't. It wasn't bad. It wasn't my favorite. A couple things that I liked about it. There's some very. They did some nice kind of. Tip of the hat or nods to the live action version of A Hunchback of Notre Dame and very much pointed to the fact that they will be in the same universe, like in the same time framing and period and everything, because they go to Notre Dame in this movie for a slight period. And if you remember back the Hunchback of Notre Dame in the original Disney animated film, Belle is in the crowd.
Right.
So it definitely it's a throwback to that original kind of
soundtracks of Disney movies, just for the record.
Oh, hands down. So anyway, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying this was bad. It's not bad at all. On all accounts, the acting was good, the music was great, the scenes or like the sets were amazing, and the visual effects were great. I loved Josh Gad as LeFou. He freaking knocked it out of the park. But I would say I would give it probably a 7 if I was plotting it. I totally understand why it's the most like the biggest movie in the world right now. It's like $160 million over the weekend. It's like shattered all sorts of records for family films and all sorts of things. So, anyway, Patrick, what would you rate it?
Well, I'm so annoyed at the experience that it's kind of wrecked what my rating would be. I mean, truth be told, like, I get the reviews. I felt better in the movie. It felt better to me than the average review. So like in the movie, I would probably give it an 8 or even a 9, given that not because it's an amazing film itself, but as something that's paying respect to the animated film, I thought it did a great job. So I would probably give it like a 9 from that standpoint. I just had a really crappy experience, and then thinking about it after the fact, that score might drop a little bit. But I think looking at it through the lens of the animated film, that is higher for me than if I actually viewed it as a standalone film.
That's maybe a good point. I think that's a fair way to address it. I would like to go back. So it's fun for me. I'd like to go back and ask Will Finn, who we know and we've talked to on the show, who animated Cogsworth. I would love to go back and ask him, and maybe we'll just reach out and say, hey, what's your feeling? Because I felt like Cogsworth was one of the characters that got the shaft a little bit in this film in terms of character development. And so I would just like to see his take on it. So anyway, let us know what you thought about the film. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure there will be plenty of time. It'll be in theaters for quite a while.
Are you going to go see it, Patrick? Are you going to go finish it?
I can't. We only had 20 minutes left in the film. I mean, we looked at when the next showing was. Like, the next showing was at 9.
I know you didn't finish it. Are you going to?
No, I can't. I can't sit through all that again for 20 minutes of film. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not going to waste my vouchers for 20 minutes of film. I'll get Andrew to sketch out the last 20 minutes. And then
I've already got half of that done, okay, so you're great.
Well, and then I'll watch it on iTunes or something. That's interesting,
because you said during watching it, it was like an 8 or a 9. But you still don't want to go back and finish it.
I'm going to be honest. I don't rewatch things.
It's a principle thing.
It's And again, like, okay, I got the voucher. I'm not going to spend that voucher on 20 minutes of film. Well, I'm going to spend that voucher on 2.5 hours of film. So it just is what
it
is.
He'll wait till it comes out on Blu-ray. He'll borrow it from somebody and he'll watch the last 20 minutes then.
Here's what I'll do. I'll time it where I can go see a different movie with the voucher, leave and walk into another theater and just stand beside the stairs and watch the last 20 minutes of the film.
And when they try to kick you out, you just give them the finger. Yeah. It's great. It's going to work out perfectly.
Fire alarm.
I'll show him my voucher. Well, no, I would have spent it. But guys, opening weekend grossed $170 million, beat out Batman v Superman for largest March opening.
How much did it cost to make?
More than that.
Yep.
No, yes. I don't know how much it cost to make. I didn't look that up. But $170 million is huge. It's crazy.
Way better than Monster Trucks, which cost which $150 million to make, and it made $60 million. For the entire run.
Yeah, they wrote off $90 million. Man.
All right, so that's it for our master categories, and that means that's it for this episode. A huge thanks to Andrew Cole for joining us, as always. What a pleasant fella. And even though we got off on a couple little tangents, all in all, we're all family here, and it's great times. We have a contest going on right now. If you are not part of it, now is your chance to jump in. Aren't these
entries so good?
Yes.
Yes. So we're doing this. So we're thrilled to be partnering with Baron Fig right now. Baron Fig right now with the podcast. And if you haven't heard the story, go back and listen to last week. I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but we're doing a Bear and Fig contest right now where you are branding the fictional company Bear and Fig, like the fruit fig. And we're seeing some entries come in that are just really smart branding. Like, if this was a real company, some of these should be legitimately considered as logos because they're very, very creative and very fun. So I believe there's one more week of this, right, Patrick?
One more week of this, and then the winner is going to get – so there's two winners. One yes. is going to get to pick any size confidant. So there's three sizes of the confidant now. There's the regular – and
how exciting
the
is that?
There's the flagship. I know. There's the I almost ordered my pluses today. I'm trying to decide if I need to add more to my order before I order it. There's the plus, which is a large size confidant. There's the flagship style confidant. And then there's the now pocket version of the confidant, which is so great.
Yeah.
Yes. So one person will get the confidant, and then the other person will get a set of the Infinity. That's what I couldn't remember the name. Infinity. It was getting to me. But they'll get a set of the Infinity Vanguard.
Yeah.
So those will be the two things.
So go ahead and do that now. The hashtag is what? It's you're tagging us. You're tagging M of One Podcast, and you're tagging Baron Fig, BaronFig, and then you're hashtagging it.
Bear and
M of
Fig.
One Bear and Fig.
You can you can do either. I think Bear and Fig. So just hashtag Bear and Fig will work fine. But just at M of One so we can find you, and at Baron Fig so they see you.
Yeah, it's a great time. Join that party because it's a way to win.
Really cool
product.
Stuff.
So, Patrick, I believe you had something else to say.
Absolutely. So last week we did Design Recharge, which was a great,
super fun.
How much fun was that?
Yeah
absolutely.
Oh my gosh. I wish we could do it every week.
It was a blast. I mean, the episode was an hour, but we went for like another hour. We had a bunch of people video chatting at once, and it was just, man, it's so cool. It
turned into like a community affair at the end.
Exactly. Just people doing life together. Great. And but during it, someone asked the question, what can they do to support the podcast? I mean, of course, giving money is a very obvious one. But, you know, as far as like showing support, helping us out, what's the best way to jump in? And my answer to that was that just do community with people. Do life with people. Like the best thing you can do is jump in our Slack and talk to others, and share links with people, show off work that you're doing. You know, if you have a store and you're offering 15% off, like offer our community 15% off, or, you know, and of course share the episodes through Instagram, Twitter, whatever, like anything like that where you're interacting with us and interacting with the M of One community, it's just going to help everybody. And so I said that, and then Adam Keeper, he responded in big way by leaving us a message. And so Adam says, the title is I Did It Again, Oh No. And he put, guys, I was so moved by Patrick's call to fill the review section with yet more badly accented iTunes reviews that I updated mine. Well, you've been busy lately, right? I provided you with a text this time rather than a JPEG, but I just checked. It is up on the iTunes podcast review section. Now, the reason he sends it to us is because he's from South London, and so we don't see his reviews in the American iTunes store. Ah. So that's the reason he sent it to us. So he said, P.S. I hail from Southeast London. I Googled what this sounds like for you. The search results threw up Gary Oldman and Michael Caine. So that being said, I have, and I'm gonna drop this in the lounge so you guys can see it. I have his new review that is supposed to be read in the voice of Michael Caine.
And all right, go for it, Patrick.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm no.
Here we go. No, Patrick, I have to
hear a reference. So, Andrew, I need you to start, and then I'll use that reference. So, if you'll take it all the way to the end of the word measure, then I'll pick up and I'll take it through regulatory, and then Luke will take it. So,
okay, we apologize in advance for any and all offense,
especially
taken.
To Michael Caine.
Yeah, well, yeah, and also we know you're listening.
Gentle listener, what do you look for in a podcast? Community? Inspiration?
That sounds a little bit like Jack Sparrow.
Actually, I think this is a better Jason Statham than you did earlier, but keep going.
Personality, quality sound, and the occasional blooper for good measure.
That's me. Sorry. I was... Yes. Oh, no, that was too dark.
Did you say that was Tupac? Did you say that was Tupac?
No, I said it was too dark. I did like a Batman mix with Michael Caine.
You're channeling Batman.
Me too. M of One has the whole package. Be spirited. I can't. If I'm laughing, I can't even do anything, much less... These spirited young gentlemen have to be some of the hardest working podcasters in the game, dropping quality content with pleasing regularity. Nope. Yep.
Yeah, that was right.
Was it me now? I'm sorry.
Yep.
Why only recently there's been some top draw episodes on game development and illustration. I'm getting myself a decent whirlwind education on things I would have otherwise missed out on. The Ape Meets Girl and Von Glitchka episodes are some recent highlights as well, worth a listen. What are you waiting for? Do me a favor.
I think we should all three together read What Are You Waiting For? Do You Us a Favor.
All right.
All right. So 3, 2, 1.
What are you waiting
what
for?
What are you waiting for?
Do
your ears a favor.
Yeah, I think that one, Patrick, I can't imagine how anyone would think that was a bad idea.
Sorry.
Yeah, so.
Sorry.
So there we go. So thank you, Adam Keeper, and thank you for sending us text this time. That certainly helped.
Oh, sorry.
Next time, since we've now accomplished South London, if you want to send us North London next time, then we'll show you.
It'll sound a lot like this. Gentle listener. What do you look for in a podcast?
But see, the local, they would hear the difference. We don't hear it, but the local would.
And Patrick, what would a Western London person sound like?
Gentle listener. Gentle listener. What do you look for in a podcast?
It's different. Oh. Also, that's what a chimney sweep sounds like.
I'm pretty sure we're just channeling Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins at this point.
Okay. Oh, one other clarification. Last week I read the review from Feast, and I think I said Mr. Feast or Mrs. Feast. I wasn't paying attention that Feast is Frank Montano.
What? So it's and Mr. Feast.
It's Mr. Feast, but it totally didn't hit me. And now that he says it, like he commented on a picture and said, it's Mr. Feast. And then I remember that he uses that on stuff, yeah. And I just missed it. So that review was from Frank Montano. He's awesome. We'll have him back on the show soon because we need to catch up. It's been a minute since we've talked, and he keeps
He's
putting out awesome
cool
work.
Stuff, man.
And then we have another new review from The Rourke Co., and the title of this is Lunch with Nerd Friends, and it is as follows. Some podcasts feel like they're meant to teach you something or convince you to change your opinion about something. This podcast, refreshingly, feels like neither of those things. It's like getting lunch with your buds while you discuss pop culture, and sometimes you agree to disagree. There's a lot of freedom, a lot of humor, and a lot of new discoveries. I've bought board games, video games, got into designer toys, etc. because of this show. Give it a listen and become a part of our very large and very noisy family.
Isn't what that, is so funny,
it
Luke?
Sounded like Patrick said nudist coverings.
Nudist coverings?
Nudist coverings.
Well, I'll just go listen to it back and see if I did.
I've bought a ton of nudist coverings since I started listening to this podcast. Oh, that's really nice. Who was that? The Rourke Company? Rourke & Co?
So it says Rourke Co, and I could do more investigation, but I could also just guess that that's probably Adam Rourke. Rourke. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be
or
my
Rocky
guess.
Rourke. There's a handful of Rourkes we have in our arsenal.
There are, but arsenal. Adam Rourke is the one hanging out in the Slack channel. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm going to vote Adam.
Yeah, well, if that was you, Adam, thank you for the kind words. Honestly, even the one that we just totally butchered with the English accent, super nice words. Yeah. Like, this is cool. Thank you guys so much. We are doing something super cool for you guys, for the people in our community. We are doing the artist coloring book that we are releasing at Creative South. If you were listening last week, we debuted it. We talked a lot about it on the on Design Recharge with Diane. So if you haven't heard about it, just go back and listen to those episodes. But a quick idea about it is that there are people. Aaron Draplin is a part of this thing. Tom Whalen and his son collaborated on a piece for this. There, Jared Mariama, Shauna Lynn,
the Bancroft brothers,
Tegan White, the Bancroft brothers. Like it's
Kevin Tong.
It's
nuts.
It's stupid that these people. Noah Elias has contributed a piece. It's just dumb how we have been able to just
Joey
harness
Caffone,
these
Baron Fig.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. So the book is going to be a ton of fun. It's going to be about 45 pages worth of content. Yeah, Patrick.
Well, so and here's the thing. This is a limited run of 100 and we're selling these at Creative South. Honestly, they'll probably all go.
Yep.
If they don't, extras will be offered to patron members first. And then they'll be offered to Slack community members. That's kind of like
Correct.
The order. So if you can't make it to Creative South and you want to get one of these books, honestly, the best way you can have a chance of getting one of these books is to support us on Patreon and get in the patron channel because they'll get first offering and then it'll go down to Slack community.
Yeah, it'll be a private link and then anything that's left.
And
so,
frankly, it's not going to make it past the Slack community. So.
Yeah, I doubt very seriously. So speaking of that, join us on Patreon. You can support the show there. You can become a patron for as little as $1. But why not contribute $5 or $50, you know? Why not while you're at it?
Prove it.
Yeah. And you can also join the Slack community as well. So if you're not already a part of that, it's a great time. As you heard in some of those reviews, the family is big and it is loud, but it is a lot of fun. And so hop in there. There are so many talented artists, creatives, entrepreneurs, all these people doing life day in and day out in the Slack community. Just go to mofonepodcast.com/slack to be a part of that. Go to patreon.com/mofonepodcast to support the show there. Also go to mofonepodcast.com for show notes and links to all the stuff we talked about in this episode. And don't forget to do the contest with the Bear and Fig. Go to iTunes and subscribe and then rate and review. It helps us a ton. Doesn't take you a ton of time, doesn't cost you any money, but it helps us out so much. And we will have fun reading it on air, as you've heard in this episode. There's so many ways to connect with us, but just the bottom line is, do. Just connect with us. We're on MF1 Podcast on almost anything. Just type that in. You can find us. But for now, we're going to get out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
And for Andrew Kolb, peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butts.
I was the one who had it all. I was the master of my fate. I never needed anybody in my life. I learned the truth too late. I'll never shake away the pain. I close my eyes, but she's still there. I let her fire steal into my melancholy heart. It's more than I can bear. Now I know she'll never leave me, even as she runs away. She will still torment me, calm me, hurt me, move me, come what may. Wasting in my lonely tower, waiting by an open door.
This has been Andrew. Bye.
Oh yeah, I thought you had like a sign out, like
keep it calculated.